What do you think is the best predictor of habit formation? And then I have four options. So that the behavior is easy, that there's a supportive environment, that there's a consistency in time and place, or that there's high motivation. And for the most part, people often lean towards say like, definitely it's the easy behavior or it's the high motivation. Those must be the best predictors. Interesting enough, research on habits suggests that all of those are good predictors, but consistency is actually the best predictor.
Personal finance, budgeting, cash flow, and investing don't have to be scary words. The We Talk Sense podcast is here to help you learn more about money and take control of your personal finances. The We Talk Sense podcast is not a financial advisor. This podcast is made for entertainment and educational purposes only. All information shared is of a general nature and does not take into account your personal situation. You should consider whether the information is appropriate for your needs and, where appropriate, seek professional advice from a financial advisor.
For more information, please check out wemoney.com.au/disclaimer.
G'day, welcome back. We've missed you. My name is Dan Javeski, and that's Blaze.
Hello.
And you're tuned in to our very first episode of We Talk Sense for 2022. If you cast your mind back to the start of 2021, we learned about setting goals. We also learned about how to become better negotiators with Ben Byth, which has been one of the most listened to podcasts to date. This year, we're taking a different approach. We're looking at how to implement behavior change and achieve your goals. One of those fad ways to think about achieving your wildest dreams, we're going to break it down with a scientific-based approach. And we have a super fascinating chat with author and keynote speaker Samuel Salzer, who goes into the whys and hows of behavior change. It's a fascinating episode.
It seriously is. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed our chat with Sam. So it's time to whip out your metaphorical paintbrush and start painting on your clean slate for 2022 with a few extra skills up your sleeve. Let's do it. Let's press play on our chat with the one, the only, Samuel Salzer. We may be a few days into 2022 already, but that does not mean the fireworks that go off on midnight have come to an end. Because, my friends, we are about to kick off We Talk Sense for 2022 with one hell of a bang. I am so incredibly excited about our first guest for the year. Now, when we were brainstorming for this episode, we asked ourselves, what can we do on the podcast that will best help set us up and you listening up to achieve success in 2022? And the topic we landed on was, of course, behavior change. What is it that we can learn about habits to inspire change and see lasting difference in our lives? Now, when it comes to behavioral science, there is one habit expert that Dan suggested, and I thought, nah, no way. There's absolutely no way we could get them on the show. But you know what? Sometimes you shoot for the stars and sometimes you strike gold. So when we received an email saying yes, I'm not ashamed to say that I let out a high-pitched squeal of excitement and did a little happy dance. So without further ado, let's welcome today's guest. He's passionate about habits, behavioral design, behavioral economics, behavioral science, and user experience. If you've got no idea what any of that means, don't worry. We're about to pick his brains on it. He's one of the hosts from the Behavioral Design Podcast, and he helps create habit-forming products by using insights from behavioral economics and applied behavioral science. Tuning in all the way from Stockholm, Sweden, please welcome keynote speaker and author Samuel Salzer to the show. How are you going today, Sam?
Well, now it's great. That was a wonderful introduction, and I got an ego boost to start today, so thank you, guys.
We got an ego boost by you saying, yes, we thought all of our Christmases have come early. So thank you so much, Sam. Now, Sam, in the intro, I mentioned you talk a lot about habits and behavioral science and design. Can you explain what exactly this is for our listeners, what you do, and make sense of it for someone who may have never heard of this before?
Yeah, sure. So I work as a applied behavioral strategist, and what that means is that there's this wonderful, wonderful world of research in behavioral science where we look at, you know, why we do what we do. What is the motivation behind the things we do? what is the justifications or mechanisms in which we find stories to support the things we do, and everything in between. So there's a lot of obviously wonderful research in explaining human behavior. And what I've dedicated my career to is taking that research and put it to practice. So seeing how we can build better products, better services, and hopefully make a world that allows for people to live happier, healthier, and wealthier, right? We talk sense, lives. So that's kind of what I try to do.
Sam, that's absolutely incredible. And, you know, one of the genesis actually of WeMoney and this podcast was to get a deeper understanding of ourselves, human psychology and behavior. And we almost feel like now that the final frontier is knowing ourselves. And the better we can understand ourselves, the more that we can understand how we can make more positive change in our lives. Now, for somebody who has never even heard of behavioral science and economics, it sounds like a brand new phenomena or a brand new practice of human research. Could you just outline for the audience, you know, some of the areas of investigation and inquiry that's led you to this path of behavioral science, and maybe some practical examples that, you know, most of our audience would know about in terms of some core topics and themes when it comes to behavioral science?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So one thing to emphasize is that we're obviously extremely complex. You know, human beings are complex and we live in a very complex world. And so if we look at the field of behavioral science and we kind of rewind the clock back a little bit to see, okay, how has the field evolved over the years? We started in a very basic way to, you might have heard of Pavlov and his dogs, for example, or Skinner and his pigeons. So what they were studying is to see like, well, how, actually Pavlov studied not so much behavior, but that happened to be one of the kind of the interesting findings, where he had a bell and he rang the bell, and then while giving food to his dogs, he noticed that after a while they started to salivating even just hearing the bell. So they had this conditioned response, and that was kind of in the early 1900s. And then since then things have evolved. We look a little bit more, but for a long time, we still in behavioral science focused a lot on what could be kind of seen outside of the brain. So to say, we could have a response. Again, Skinner is very famous for this, having some form of box where you put the pigeon and some form of pellet coming down, and you have to pick on something, and you change the frequency of this pellet coming, either a fixed or a variable frequency, and noticing how does that affect the pigeons picking on this low bottom, for example. And so in very early days, like we mostly studied how like things in our environment corresponded with our behavior. So if you had some form of stimulant or some form of thing that happened, how do we respond to those things? And as the field has evolved, we've tried to also look more on the kind of cognitive side and understand like what are the cognitive processes that helps us also maybe reason for these things. Because Skinner had a very famous quote, I think it was Skinner, who said that, you know, give me any boy or girl and I'll make them whatever you want me to be, you know. So pretty much like, okay, well, do you want them to be a firefighter or a math genius? I can set up an environment that would condition them into becoming that. So he was very confident in that whatever we can do in terms of our environments is pretty much what controls our behavior. And what we have obviously seen in later years is that it's a little more complex than that. We're not just conditioned completely by our environments, even though they're very important. And so I think what's really fascinating in the kind of later decades of behavioral science is really understanding how our cognitive side of things work. Why do we, for example, care more about certain things? How do we justify one thing or another? And motivation is a big aspect here, where, for example, Skinner wouldn't think too much about motivation, whereas now we have much more complex theories on explaining why we do what we do. So maybe that was a lot of jargon, maybe I was a little bit going into history too much, but I can say personally for me, what really hooked me was the feeling that as I was studying this science, it was as I was kind of seeing the world a bit clearer every day. I felt like I had seen it maybe as a growing up in a very kind of low resolution way. And then as I was learning and reading this research, I feel like I was like getting a more crisper view of the human experience. And I think that was really, really amazing. And I couldn't help but kind of jump into this rabbit hole of this fascinating world of behavioral science research.
Well, amazing, Sam. And I get reminded, my little Pavlovian prompt every single Wednesday when my wife calls my name at 6 o'clock, it's not because she wants to make me dinner or give me a cup of tea. It's for me to go take the bins out. So I'm very, very promptly reminded of that. But that's an awesome overview, Sam. When it comes to, you know, actually achieving some behavior change, what are some starting points that we could sort of look at to understand ourselves a lot better in terms of, you know, setting out a goal or a vision? Right now, if we think about ourselves, it's the start of a brand new year. You know, where do people start in understanding their own behavior and some of their prior, you know, habits or proclivities in how they interact with themselves and their emotions, to how they might be able to understand how they can change their behavior for the better?
Yeah, great question. And I'll be honest with that it can feel often overwhelming for people that they have maybe this New Year's resolution they've set, and then they have this really strong intention that, oh, I would love to make this a reality. But then this gap between intention and action is often much wider than we, you know, sometimes wish it was. It can be a little bit daunting to actually go from whatever, you know, goal or intention or resolution we have to actually making that into something we do every day and hopefully make it into a habit maybe. And so one thing that I like to do is actually start with the basic premise that you are very unique. Whatever I tell you today might not work perfectly the same way for you as it would for your friend or your partner or your colleague, right? We're all very different. So that's a very important thing to kind of start with. And that's also why it's maybe not always the best thing to just Google up like top tips and then just blindly follow them, because we're all different. So the first thing I usually ask people to do is think back for maybe recent year or so, if they've had any new habits they've built. It could technically be a good or a bad one, doesn't really matter too much, but be a little bit curious about why did that happen for me? Like, why did I, you know, I never been someone who did X before, but now I'm doing it. Like, why did that happen? So kind of putting on these kind of little more lenses of curiosity to understand our own behavior. So I think before having all of these ambitious plans and all of these ambitious, you know, strategies for how to nudge yourself to success, I think that's the best place to start, to start with some curiosity of ourselves, our own behavior. And then what we can do is kind of build a little more curiosity around our environment. So I think going a little back to what we talked about before, the good old days of behavioral science, the environment is extremely impactful. And it's really interesting to understand how we're impacted by it. And so what I usually also try to do is to kind of think back of, okay, if I've struggled before, is there certain things that I tend to have as an excuse? Is there certain things that I tend to blame, for example? And so to a little bit paint a picture of like, what are the barriers that are usually in my environment? And it's initially it's hard because you don't really think about it in this way, but it's good to start there, because what's really, really useful is that, spoiler alert, there will be times when we fail. There will be times where we have the intention to go to the gym, but don't go, right?
Guilty. Or,
yeah. all of us probably would say that, guilty as charged. So when we start with this lens of more curiosity around, you know, what affects our behavior and how our environment impacts us, we can then ask ourselves, instead of you saying, oh, we're so stupid and lazy if we're not going to the gym, we can ask ourselves, well, what were the kind of these factors, maybe these barriers or friction points or something that made it a little bit harder? Because we have this incredible, you know, bias that's quite recent that I think is interesting, where we have decided to add solutions in terms of adding things to solve problems. But as some wonderful research by Leidy Klotz and Gabriel Adams and others, they've shown that we have this bias towards, again, adding rather than subtracting. And oftentimes, subtracting is the most impactful thing we do to change behavior. So we think that we should add all of these strategies to make us more motivated or make us more excited or have a stronger willpower. But actually, the best thing you can do is often to have that curiosity to understand how our environments affect us, our behavior. And then when we notice these barriers come along, to just be really good at removing them, finding ways to kind of, okay, can I realizing that I'm always a little bit hungry and at this time of the day, and so instead of going to the gym, I go and buy something at Macca's, for example. Mm. You see what I did there, by the way? Macca's, Australian reference.
Good on you.
Yeah. But, you know, if we have that in foresight, that we were usually hungry at this time, we might have a snack that we can add to our backpack and always have ready for when that moment comes. And so when we kind of become more aware of these things that kind of make us to stumble or fall, that's usually the most impactful thing. So I can get to some other strategies as well. I can get some more sexy, you know, strategies for success. But I think that's really important to understand that oftentimes the ways in which we succeed is not because we don't have these fancy advanced strategies. It's because we're kind of blind to these forces in our environment. And so we're feeling like we're swimming upstream, but we don't really know why. And so that's the first step, to really starting to be curious about what makes this a upstream feeling of an experience.
So in the context of, you know, a lot of our listeners, we're probably all, you know, I feel like if you're listening to this podcast, there's a high chance that you're starting out 22 with some goals, right? You probably got some personal goals. You might have a health or fitness or relationship related goal. And if you're tuned into this, you're very likely to have some sort of financial goal. And so I took a look at some of the most popular goals that We Money members have. And these are things like save for a car, pay off the mortgage, camping trips, upcoming holidays, saving for a luxury car, Mercedes Benz, hello, get an investment property. All these are sort of big financial goals that we know that our members have and our listeners have as well. With those in mind and thinking about how you're just mentioning friction, I listened to your behavioral design podcast where you interviewed Wendy Wood and discussed friction and how to remove cues to influence behavioral change. Could you explain this in a little bit more detail and maybe provide an example of how we could remove a cue or add friction to prompt behavior change when it comes to achieving something like a goal, like buying a luxury car or saving for your wedding or your first home?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is actually a really, really important, I think, insight into human behavior, is that there's many words for this, but they call cues or triggers or prompts. Doesn't really matter what name you know them by, but these are the things that activates all of our behaviors. And they, in broad stroke, take these two forms, so external and internal. So whenever we do behavior, there's always a cue. And that's really interesting to understand that. And there's always something that cues this behavior to happen. It can be internally that we have a feeling, a craving, some form of emotional response, or it can be something in our environment. It could be a ping on our phone. It could be something we see, something we hear, something we smell. You know, the list goes on. And so that's really interesting, because if we know that, you know, every behavior starts with a cue, we can understand that, well, what if I become a little more of a master of my cues? So I usually have this metaphor for habits in terms of, it's a little bit like a garden, that we can imagine we all have this garden. And the big difference is that for many of us, this garden just grows without we really know how to best take care of it. And so it just kind of, as you will see, a garden that doesn't really get much attention, you get a lot of weeds, you get a lot of, you know, maybe not the nicest stuff. But if we can better kind of tend to our garden, in this case, our habits, and better understand, like, okay, what are these cues that maybe, as you mentioned, maybe trip us up? So we all can relate to cues that are annoying from our phones, that we can relate that, well, if we have our notifications on our phone, just by having an app's notification on, we're obviously much more likely to visit that app. So if that app is Wish, or that app is a spending, some form of like Amazon, whatever app it is for shopping, well, we're probably going to shop more, right? We're probably going to spend more money on clothes if we get daily updates on like the latest deals for clothing.
clothes and all the ridiculous items you can buy on Wish, the vampire right. teeth, the pants with no crutch, the whole thing. You can get anything on there, I swear.
Sounds like you've done your research. Yeah.
I've made a purchase or five on Wish before. Yeah. I'm not ashamed to say.
I think that's a really important thing to understand. Okay, well, what if I am trying to be like a master of my, as we go back to like my triggers or my prompts or my cues, what would I do? Well, I probably would look at these kind of main things. I'll look at my phone, I'll look at my computer, and I'll try to remove everything that prompts me to spend money that I, in hindsight, don't want to spend. So obviously, I think everyone listening, and you guys would probably agree that spending money is not a bad thing, obviously, as long as you feel like it's money well spent, that you can look back afterwards and say, well, that was a really good investment. I was really happy with those pairs of, what do you call it, crotchless pants?
Yes, crotchless pants.
I'm very happy about that. But there's oftentimes where we look at our bank statements or if we have some form of apps that maybe inform us of our spending and we say, well, actually, that purchase was not that smart. I shouldn't have done that. And not that either. And definitely not that one. And so one of the best things you can do there is just to kind of remove these prompts to spend those kind of things. So I personally am extremist here. Like I try to have pretty much no notifications on my phone. Become much better in my inbox as well to kind of remove these newsletters that always tells me that, oh, this week we have a special deal for, you thought the crotchless pants were cheap yesterday. Well, today they're even cheaper. So I really tried to avoid anything like that. And I think that's one way, right? That's one way, again, to think about, okay, how do I avoid this thoughtless spending that leaves me not much better off, but with less money? The other side of the coin, which we maybe can dig into more, is thinking about, you know, the saving aspect. So how can I encourage myself to save? So we could obviously add prompts to save. So that's one way to do it. We could add prompts to say that we might talk a little bit more about the benefits of automations and defaults and so on. But let's say we didn't want to do that right now. We could still find good ways to prompt us to save. We could have, when we know we're going to get our regular check from our job, we can have like a little bit of ping to say, hey, put this here or do this with this. So there are obviously ways we can structure our phone or our computer or our environments in general to remind us also to save. And the most classic version of this is obviously like a piggy bank. But you know, with tap and go, it's not as easy. I don't know if there's a tap and go piggy bank. That would be really cool, actually, if there was.
That's a great idea.
Oh, very good idea. Almost as good as crotchless pants. That's amazing.
We're going to have like, everyone is going to leave this podcast. Like, maybe I should check that out.
We'll be making Wish very rich, I think, now that we're sharing our fashion trends with the world.
Well, Sam, I think you're on a really important thread here. So, you know, we could talk about the benefits of having defaults, your environment, introspection, understanding ourselves. But in terms of somebody that's going out there and setting a goal for themselves, as Blazer sort of pointed out, you know, they set the goal, they know where they want to head to. You know, what is the next steps to maintain conformance to your goal and maybe understand when, you know, when things actually don't work out? We talked about, you know, problems and issues that arise and not going to the gym. But what should people be doing after they set the goal? What are the next sort of practical steps that they can do?
Can I hijack this question and take it a little bit to a different direction?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Because I want to take us a little bit back to that idea of defaults, because I think that's really valuable here. Because to explain to anyone who hasn't heard of this term is pretty much, you know, setting some form of default into anything. You've probably seen it in terms of maybe when you sign up for a newsletter or a website, they have this kind of ticked box to say like, well, subscribe to this and this and this, this as well. And you have to kind of untick it to not subscribe to it. And that's very effective. So defaults kind of leans into our lazy side, that we follow the path of least resistance and do whatever is the kind of the default. And the best payroll strategy you can do is to default and automate things so you don't have to do it. it happens kind of by itself. So that's where we're, honestly, if we can with our saving and with our, in general, financial goals, if there are ways where we can automate that as much as possible, the better. You know, that's great. Additionally, what I think is a really underrated strategy in, you know, applied behavioral science is something called commitment devices. So it's kind of related to this, and it's the most common example of commitment devices is Odysseus on his ship, where he, in the Odyssey, he goes past this sea creatures called the Sirens that have this song that makes everyone jump off the boat. And so no one has survived this song, but Odysseus wants to be the first one to survive. So he tells his mates that, well, can you tie me to the mast? And whatever you do, don't untie me. And his mates in turn put in some earwax, or some, not earwax, but some some other wax in their ears to make it so they can hear the siren song. And so as they pass the sirens, Odysseus can hear it. His mates, you know, they can't hear it, so they don't jump either. And so he's the first one to kind of hear the song. So the good news is that we don't have to tie ourselves to a mast to succeed in our savings or in our financial goals. We can do other smart things. So one thing, a little bit related to what I've mentioned, is that obviously we can set up these auto pay or auto transfers, for example, in advance to say that this time of the month, I'm going to, you know, this much is always going to be transferred to this account, to my savings account, for example. Another thing I love of, if I can throw out a Swedish startup called Dreams, they do a pretty fun thing where they, I don't think it's maybe available in Australia, but the idea is useful to know, is that they kind of attach savings to a dream. So instead of thinking about it as, you know, I should save because I oughta, it's attached to more of a fun thing. You mentioned these wonderful reasons to save, like a Mercedes or whatever people mentioned. And it's obviously easier to save when we have something tangible, like a vacation or a house or a car that we really want to buy. So that's the first thing they do quite well. But secondly, they have this feature where you can add things that just randomly takes money from your account. So you can select various things. You can select every time my team scores a goal, you know, $20 is taken from my account.
Nice.
Or what?
I can have a burglar that just comes in there every once in a while and takes $10 here, $5 here. And so it's just one decision. You make a commitment initially to kind of enable these features, but then it happens by itself. Like you're going to see in your bank statement that depending on the thing you're kind of enabled, things are going to disappear from it to your savings. And you don't have to do it. You don't have to do anything. So that's really powerful. If we can do that, that's great. And probably the most extreme version or fun version from like the good old days, before even this was possible, I know people would put their credit card in the freezer. So as a commitment device to like not spend too much money, they would like freeze in their credit card in something, put it in the freezer, and when they wanted to shop something, they literally had to, I guess they had a, I was going to say cool down period, but it's the opposite. They're going to have to heat it up to actually make that purchase. And so then again, that's a way to kind of have a commitment device initially that sets us up for not being maybe too responsive in this kind of moment of, oh, I saw this cool dress or this cool thing that I want to buy, you know, have this moment where we're forced to cool down and we're forced to take a step back and realize, well, is this really something I need? Is this really important? I already have 5 pairs of legless pants. Do I really need a 6th pair? You know,
legless pants, that's just a waistband, isn't it? Surely that's just a belt.
I still don't know what this is, honestly, but I love the idea of it.
I'll send you a link to my favorite style, Sam. I love that idea of, I love the idea of the company that you mentioned, that every time your team scores a goal or whatever the behavior is that you want to, whatever the thing is that you want to celebrate, because that is something I've sort of been subconsciously trying to do in my own life. I love costume parties and I spend a stupid amount of my money on costumes every year. So what I've tried to do over the last couple of months is go, okay, every time I spend X amount of dollars on costumes, I'm going to put the same amount of money into my micro investing account, right? But have I done it? You know what? I've probably done it 30% of the time, because it's not automatic. There is friction there, and that I have to manually go and manually make that change. So I can totally see why removing the friction in that scenario and having a default where an app that just does it for you would completely work. Moving along from friction and defaults, though, Sam, something I've heard you mention on your podcast is temptation bundling. Could you please go into a bit of detail about what exactly temptation bundling is and how we can use it for our advantage to achieve our own personal goals?
Yeah, good question. How do I bundle my temptations? So it comes from this wonderful research by Katie Milkman, where she did an interesting study. And the study has also a funny name. It's called Holding the Hunger Games Hostage at the Gym. And what it alludes to is that she gave gym goers these MP3 players of sort, where they had audiobooks saved. The only thing was that you could only listen to the MP3 player at the gym. So it was kind of stored there, and that was the only way to get access audiobooks like Hunger Games or Harry Potter or whatever people listen to. And they noticed that when they combined going to the gym with this thing of listening to a really good audiobook, people were much, much more likely. I think it was initially in the first period of 8 weeks, it was 50% more likely. So, you know, very, very much more likely to go to the gym just because they combine it with this, in this case, audiobook. And so the general idea here is that while there are certain things that we can obviously find versions of that are more fun, because we know that if we're going to make a habit of something, it usually needs to be in some way rewarding. It needs to be some way give us some form of positive experience. So it needs to be fun, interesting, needs to have some form of positive elements to it. However, there are certain things that just aren't that fun, like cleaning, or, you know, there's certain things that we struggle with making, whatever iterations we, however we clean, however we work out, for example. We might not find a workout form that really makes us to be excited to do it. So what we can do is we can kind of couple that with something we would want to do, a temptation bundle. And so this can take so many forms. It can be, again, we can only listen to our best podcast. I'm guessing everyone is going to say We Talk Sense. So you can only listen to this podcast when you're doing one thing, or, for example, when you're meal prepping or going to the gym. It could be so many different variations of this, where you attach something that you enjoy to something you know you should do, and then say you can only do the thing you enjoy when you do the thing you should do. And so kind of in combination makes both things kind of happen and be more fun.
That is so cool, Sam. And it just made me think that I was listening to a book this year on Audible called The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And I was doing it whilst I was going to the gym, and I kind of realized the book finished and I stopped going to the gym. So that kind of makes sense.
There you go, Dan.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Full disclosure, I can only watch my kind of guilt-free, what do you call it, TV shows at the gym, on the treadmill or exercise bike. So all of the Netflix shows that I'm like, a part of me wants to watch this, but it's not a great way to, you know, spend a Friday evening. I don't have to worry about that as much. So I watched all of this. I think last one I watched was some American Barbecue Showdown I watched last week. Surprisingly entertaining. It was really good. Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
Well, I'm just going to wiggle my way here and tell you about WeMoney, the producer of this podcast. It's time to say goodbye to complex spreadsheets and those calculations and say hello to the WeMoney app. My favorite feature is the one where you can see all your accounts in one place, all your credit cards, transaction accounts, and even your crypto all in one place. Not only that, but it automatically feeds to calculate your net worth so you can get a good understanding of all your assets and liabilities all in one place. And better yet, WeMoney is completely free. And if you download the app today from the Google Play or Apple App Store and use the referral code podcast, you get $5 when you connect an eligible bank account. It's that easy.
Sam, on the show, we often talk about how small, consistent, and regular savings is one of the key ways that you can grow your wealth, right? And I sort of, in small, regular, and consistent sounds like it relates quite nicely to habits. You know, you're regularly doing something, you're being consistent. What does behavioral science have to say about this? I don't know. I guess I'm asking, what's the best way to train yourself? And is it consistency that's important when it comes to habits? Well, how important is consistency or regularity when it comes to habits? Or is it more so the environment and the defaults that you've already discussed before? Do they all tie in together and play equal roles of importance?
Fantastic question. So I often ask people when I do presentations, for example, trainings, I have this slide where I ask people, what do you think is the best predictor of habit formation? And then I have four options. So that the behavior is easy, that there's a supportive environment, that there's a consistency in time and place, or that there's high motivation. And for the most part, people often lean towards say like, definitely it's the easy behavior or it's the high motivation. Those must be the best predictors. Interesting enough, research on habits suggests that all of those are good predictors, but consistency is actually the best predictor. So the idea that consistency, to a little more, give a more nuance to what that means, is that while that's important for habits, is that a habit is something where we're going from a behavior that we do consciously to a behavior that we're training ourselves to do automatically, to do without thinking. So we're pretty much trying to train our brain to be saying to itself, whenever I'm in this time or this place or after having done this thing, I always do this. So every time I sit in the car, I put on a seatbelt. Like, it's trying to tell our brain that, you know, this is something that happens every single time in this order, for example. And so I had a really interesting experience with the app Duolingo. I don't know if you guys used Duolingo for language learning. Yeah, so I actually had like a 250-day streak. And I was looking back on the last week after 250 days, and I noticed that even after 250 days, I had almost every other day, I had this streak freeze that was used. And so streak freeze is pretty much used when you miss a day and you have this backup thing that kind of saves it anyway. And I was kind of perplexed thinking, well, I've done this for like 250 days. Surely I shouldn't miss a day now. I should be a habit. Why do I even need this supportive feature? I feel like it should have been a habit 200 days ago. And so when I did some self, you know, behavioral diagnosis of myself to understand what's going on here, I realized this one important thing that I had neglected and that the app hadn't helped me with. And that was, it hadn't helped me find this consistency in time and place of doing my language learning. So sometimes I did it in the morning when I woke up. Sometimes I did it on the way to work. Sometimes I did it in afternoon or during lunch or before going to bed. And so I never told my brain that don't think, just do at this time or place. I kept myself or my brain on my feet all the time, like, okay, when is a good time to do this language thing? And so it never became a habit. And that's a really, really valuable lesson for everyone listening, hopefully, that for a habit to form, there needs to be consistency in going back to what we talked about, cues, that there needs to be a stable cue for the behavior. So it can be a time, it can be a place, it can be a previous behavior or something else. But we need to attach it to something that happens kind of in the same way. And so we know that when this happens, then I do this. And so consistency is crucial. It's really, really important. And it's really hilarious as well that once we've trained, obviously, ourselves up with this consistency and build habits, it's amazing how mindlessly, you know, we engage. So one of the best experiments, I think, is with Wendy Wood, you mentioned. Her and her research colleague, David Neal, they did this study with popcorn where they gave people going to the cinema either fresh popcorn or 1 week stale popcorn. And people with a popcorn habit, they eat pretty much the same. Like, they didn't really matter whether it was like 1 week old popcorn or fresh popcorn. They still did the same thing because the cue was the same. They were at the cinema. They were kind of have done this so many times before. They were also kind of engaging in the movie mindlessly. And so the rest just happened by itself. And so if we can find ways where we can connect these, call it routines or rituals to what we're trying to do, that's going to make things much, much easier. So yeah, that's enough of me ranting about the importance of consistency.
What's amazing, Sam, so you've taken us, you know, on a quite a bit of a journey. And as we look to our own personal situations for 2022, you know, you're an expert in behavior design for organizations and creating, you know, habit forming, you know, products. But if we take a step back and look at this at the individual level, what are some practices that we can apply to impact our own behavior change? What are things that we can do right now that can help us on this journey to achieve our goals that we have set ourselves for 2022?
Yeah, so maybe I can do a little bit of a summary in some ways as well to kind of try to map this all together that we've discussed so far. So first thing is try to be curious about ourselves to understand what has been some habits that I formed in the past that has worked for me, and why did I form those habits? What was important there? Was it that, again, was it maybe the consistency that I was really good at setting up so that I did it during the same time, same place? Was it that I had a really good support system, or that I had really good cues that always helped me remember to do it, for example? And so we start there, and then we take things, like you've mentioned as well, we take things small, we take small steps. I like to talk about kind of this minimal viable product we talk about in the product space. I think it's the same with habits. We can have this very minimal viable thing that's almost like a minimal viable dose of something where it's good enough if we do that minimal viable thing and everything else is a bonus. So what we can focus a little bit more on than we usually do is that we usually focus on, again, this goal, this objective, this outcome. And instead of focusing on the outcome of being like rich instantly, better thing to focus on is the goal of actually building the habit. And so once we're kind of invested enough time to build a habit, then the rest will become obviously much easier. So to make that happen, we usually need to take it a little bit slower and smaller than we sometimes want. We can scale it down. So we can, instead of saying that we're going to save X amount of, let's say, $1,000 every month, let's start with we're saving a little bit less, but then feeling like we're succeeding every month. So we're kind of building up this momentum of feeling like we're making progress. Because one thing that we're obviously all susceptible to is feeling like we're failing or that we should just give up and all of these things. And so obviously we should be kind to ourselves either way, but it's really useful to just take a little bit of pressure off ourselves and say that, well, I would like to go to the gym 5 times a week, but let's just say that I'll go to the gym twice a week and I'll just go for 20 minutes, for example. If I feel like it, I can stay longer. If I have time, I can go a third time, but that's all I do for the first month, for example. That is always going to be a much, much better strategy than the other one where people try to do 4 times a week. They don't succeed the first week. They feel like they're failing. They say, what the hell? I'm never going to be able to exercise in my life. And then they give up. So take it step by step. Take it slow. Take it small. Be very mindful of your P's and Q's, I was going to say. But yeah, your prompts and your cues. And be curious. Be curious. Be interested in understanding if you didn't still manage to get to the gym, why? You know, there's surely a reason. So there's no kind of magical force in the nature of the universe that's trying to prevent you to go from the gym. There's something you can probably quite easily understand. So if you can understand that, you can probably solve for it and find a workaround, or maybe just realizing that maybe the gym is not for me. Maybe I should go to salsa class, or I should go to X, Y, and Z. Ooh. So that's what I would do.
Sam, I absolutely love that. And how you mentioned it, breaking the task down into smaller, more achievable goals, rather than going, yes, I'm going to work out so hard 5 times a week to the 20 minutes, 2 days a week. Breaking a task into smaller, achievable goals is absolutely the way to go, because you know what? Screw those feelings of failure that come along when you feel like you're not achieving because you've set yourself too hard a task. And you know what? If you're listening to this episode now and it's the 10th of January, the majority of people fail or give up on their New Year's resolutions 17 days into January. So we're just over halfway there. But if you're listening now when you're losing motivation, I encourage you to look back at your goals, look back at your resolutions, and maybe think, how can I make this easier for myself? How can I make this smaller and break this down into smaller tasks that are achievable so you can get them done and have that motivation along the way and go, you know what? I did go to the gym for 20 minutes, 2 days a week this week. Now, next week, I'm going to make it 3, or next week, I'm going to stay for 25 minutes, 2 days. Break your tasks into achievable things, because you know what? If you're out there listening and you're achieving some goals, we completely support you and we want to see you get there. So thank you, Sam, for all of your advice. And you know what? I could ask you questions all day. I think this is so fascinating and you've just got so much information and so much knowledge to share with us. So we're really appreciative that you came to join us all the way on a podcast produced out of Perth in Australia, so far away from where you are in the world, Sam. So thank you. And before we go, one final question. Is it true, does it take three, that old wives' tale, it takes 3 weeks to form a habit? Is it 21 days to form a habit? Is that true? What are your thoughts on it?
It depends. It's actually, the truth is that it depends. So the number comes from actually a really interesting source. It comes from this guy, I think it was Maxwell something. He was a cosmetic surgeon in the 1950s and 60s. And he noticed that after cosmetic surgery, his patient took about 3 weeks to get used to their new facial features or whatever they had reconstructed. And then based on that said, well, maybe that's true for, you know, all things. Maybe that's true. We need, you know, about 3 weeks to form habits. And he wrote a book, I think it's called Cyber Cybernetic or something like that, became a bestseller. And yeah, the rest is history. So people still believe that that number is true and is based on research, but not really. It's based on a cosmetic surgeon in the US. But
wow.
The good news is that, yeah, the good news is that when it comes to really how long it takes, it's quite an interesting question because we think about it as a number, right? We think about it as a number of days. But I would think of more about it as a number of repetitions. So you can imagine that if you're trying to, let's say reading, because a lot of people like to read as well. They want to become more financially literate and become more knowledgeable of their kind of knowledge when it comes to finances. And so one thing we can do is we can say that every Sunday I'm going to read for, you know, 1 hour after lunch. The cycles of repetitions there is one per week. And so after 3 weeks, you have had three cycles of repetitions. After a year, you have 52. However, imagine if you said, I'm just going to read for 10 minutes every kind of lunch break, for example. Even if it's just on the weekday, that would be at least five repetitions on a week. And then after 3 weeks, it'd be 15 and, you know, so on. So you will have much more repetitions, and that's how we form habits. We form them by repeating things in the same time and place over and over again. And so that's what I would think a little bit more about, to think, how can I increase my rep cycles rather than, you know, thinking too much about how many days is it going to take to form this habit. And obviously it depends with the complexity and how difficult it is and so on. So there's the only number is actually between 18 and 250 days, which is not really a satisfying number. So
repetition it is.
Exactly.
Well, Sam, from everybody here at We Talk Sense, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on today's show. We could listen to you forever. And for those that do want to listen to Sam forever, you actually can. He's got his own podcast that you can tune into and listen into the wonderful insights into behavioral science and get to hear from some amazing global experts in this topic. But Sam, where can people learn more about you and find out a bit more about the good work that you're doing?
Yeah, I sure hope that there's even better things to listen to than my voice. So I hope they don't want to listen to me forever. You know, I'm from Sweden, so there's a lot of good Swedish music you can listen to instead, or Spotify in general. But yeah, if you'd like to know more about me, you can check it out my website, samuelsalzer.com. As mentioned, I have also built this community for people interested in understanding how we change behavior for good, using product services and everything in between, which is called Habit Weekly. So it's a weekly newsletter and a community for kind of understanding how we can apply behavioral science in practice. So that can also be a good place to check out. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. I honestly had a really good time and was really, really love you to meet you guys, at least virtually. Side note, I actually live in Australia for five and a half years. And
that's how you know how to call it Maccas. Sneaky.
Yes.
There you go.
Truth be told is that I studied at UNSW in Sydney. And so there was a Maccas very close by my college. So we frequented quite a bit during my student years.
On Parramatta Road?
That's the one. That's the one.
Oh, yeah. I've spent a lot of times in the drive-thru of there. I've spent quite a bit of time there myself, Sam. I can relate. A bad habit, I would say, of working very near to there. So, yeah. But yeah. Environment change, so it's not happening anymore. There you go.
And it's actually really funny studies on that. We're actually much more likely to obviously eat McDonald's if we're living close to one, and much more likely to go to the gym if we're close to a gym. So it's like I've... That's why I love this field of behavioral science, is that, you know, it's so many fascinating research findings all the time. And I think that's another one that we think that, well, willpower is more important than distance. And so it doesn't matter if I'm living close to a McDonald's or a gym, but actually it does. It actually, you know, if you could choose a home based on your gym location and some other things, that's probably the greatest thing you can do. So yeah. But anyway, enough talking behavioral science. Thank you guys so much. I really enjoyed being a guest, and keep up the great work. You guys are doing great things. So wish you all the best.
Thank you, Sam. And same to you. It was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. And from us here at We Talk Sense, and Sam, for you, I'm sure as well, we want to just give you a massive congrats making it 2022 and all the best with your goals and habit change for the year ahead. Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the first episode of We Talk Sense for 2022. We hope you are feeling as inspired and ready to tackle the year ahead as we are.
Now, if you've loved today's episode and you want to get in touch about your own ideas for the start of 2022, then get to us on Instagram at our handle, GetWeMoney.
We've actually got a little gift to surprise you this year. We have done a 2022 WeMoney year planner. So head straight to www.wemoney.com.au/year planner to download your free copy. And I've popped a link for it in the show notes. Dan and I will be taking a week off and giving our voices a little break from the record, but do not fret. We'll only taking 1 week off and we'll be back in your ears on the 17th of Jan. Cannot wait to see you then.
See ya.
Have a good one.